The date is 29th of July, and I'm just about to talk to Kieran Kirk, who is a local resident in Chessington, which is in the borough of Kingston in Greater London. I'm currently researching individual and community relationships with urban spaces and the impact that various elements within these can have on those living within them. During previous research, I found some supporting evidence to suggest that individuals who recognise an element of interaction or control within their areas feel generally more positive about living there, and one of the ways it was suggested that this could manifest was through involvement in local residents' associations, and I'd like, if I may, to discuss your experiences with this kind of organisation. Firstly, would you please describe your perception of your local area in terms of location size and any other elements that you think should be mentioned, just to sort of give me a background idea of how you view the place that you live?
Well, it's an urban area, but we're very fortunate in that we live right on the edge of the urban area, a few minutes walk one way, and we're in nice countryside and there's farms in the distance, and it's very pleasant, very quiet, very desirable place to live.
Okay.
That's basically it, I think. We share a bit of the urban area and a bit of the rural as well.
So it's kind of a bit of best of both worlds.
We're not too urban, but we're enough urban. But then we've got shops and buses and various other facilities at the train station, of course, which if you're out living in the middle of nowhere, you probably wouldn't have, so we're lucky to have that. But we do also have the countryside and nice wooded areas and farms, not too far.
Okay. And do you consider that to be an important element of where you live?
Yes, plenty of green space, open spaces, green places you can go and recreation, Winnie Hill particularly, and get away from the trials and tribulations of the world. You sit there and contemplate, it's peaceful, it's quiet, it's lots of birds singing. If you're lucky, you might see the odd deer, various other forms of wildlife, foxes certainly. It's a very pleasant place to live.
Okay, and how long have you lived here?
Too long. It'll be 55 years, sometime in August 2010. We moved here, my parents and I moved here in August 1955.
So you've got
55 years. I've lived actually in this hemisphere for 55 years.
Yeah. So your background with the area is related to the
Yes. Oh, indeed. Yes.
And do you feel that affects your relationship with the area as well?
I think it must be. If I live here 5 minutes, I might not feel particularly positive about it, possibly. But 55 years, I didn't like it. I would have probably gone longer.
Yeah.
Yes.
That makes sense. Okay, so as I mentioned before, I wanted to specifically talk a bit about the Residents Association and the roles that those can play within communities. So could you give me a quick rundown on your involvement in Residents Associations? I know you're not involved in anything at the moment, but I know that you also have been quite extensively in the past. So how many have you been involved in, for how long, and what sort of capacity?
Well, there have been two very local Residents Associations here, the present Residents Association and Chessington Hall Association, both of which I've been a member, and there is a more embracing Residents Association for Chessington as a whole, called the Chessington District Residents Association. I'm a member of that at the time as well. So that's how many there have been. Three, one of which is still going, the other two are no longer functioning.
Okay, and you're not involved in any directly at the moment?
No, there isn't one here. There isn't one in Yorkway or Hogarth.
Okay. What would you consider to be the primary objective? What's the main role of a residents association? What function does it serve? Why do they exist?
I think it needs to represent its members. A lot of people who, some of the people that live around here, have a very difficult understanding as to what the various authorities that we have around here, what they are, who they are, what they're responsible for, what they can do for you. I'm thinking of a local authority. Many people will just refer to the council as if somehow it's some big ogre that lives over all of us, and you can't talk to it, you can't tell it to do anything. They don't know who to talk to, they don't know who to say anything to, they don't understand what it does, how it can help, how it gets in the way. And I think for a residents association, it's representing those, the silent majority, who don't go to meetings, who don't stand up and bump a tub when they get angry. Because of these people, they don't know how to do it. They don't know who to contact. The residents association should represent them.
So it's about empowering.
It's about empowering the people who appear not to have a voice. They probably don't even know they've got no voice. Yes.
So it makes accessible the systems that are in place that are supposed to facilitate those things, that are supposed to give people a voice and a choice.
But they don't.
But they don't, because why? Why does that break down?
That's a lot of people. A lot of people don't understand what the local authorities and the police do. Well, the police is obvious, but there are various other organisations and have no idea the concept of what they do, the role they have in our local area. Very many people are really ignorant of what the local authority does and how you can manipulate and persuade, cajole, browbeat, pick up the backside of a local authority, get what you want, and you believe in the work you want. Do it the right way, go about it the right way, make enough noise. You can get them to do what you want, and you can get them to change their minds. It's difficult, it's a long, hard slog.
What, to your mind, is the cause of that ignorance? Why don't people know?
I think a lot of them don't have an interest in their local area. They may not have lived here very long. They don't know their neighbours. Quite likely do not know their neighbours. So they don't have any feeling of community. Feel the local authority and the other various agencies and remote. Don't want to have any much to do with them. Only when something goes wrong, and the dustmen don't come round and collect the rubbish on a Tuesday morning, they'll stand at the bus stop or down at the end of the street and complain and moan towards each other and say this didn't happen and that didn't happen. But they don't know how to go about sorting it out and solving the problem.
So it's a lack of willingness to find out, is it apathy?
Yes. I don't know how to use that word. It's a lack of understanding how to deal with a local authority, how to manipulate a local authority. I should suspect a lot of people don't even know who the local council is. Maybe a few more might know their MP, but many of them won't know who their local council is or how they can contact them.
And, I mean, from the small amount of experience that I've had, even personally, I know that it isn't easy to know where to start to look for that information.
No,
is it isn't made particularly clear. I mean, I don't know, maybe I think perhaps these days now local councils do have websites and things. It's perhaps a little bit more accessible, but of course that's only to a certain set of people who have access to those, to the internet and to computers generally. So that's not all encompassing by any means.
I have to say that Kingston Council's website is not the best. Not the best. I think that would be a polite way of putting it, trying to find a suitable non-rude word to describe it. There's a lot of information on it. That seems it's so old, it's unbelievable it's still there. And the more recent stuff, you can't find it. And it's only right at the last minute. A classic example today, although I haven't looked, I received a letter this morning. It wasn't addressed to me personally. It didn't come in an envelope, it came from Warborough. Telling me about the road repairs that are going to be carried out in Garrison Lane. Now they're going to start, this is Thursday, they're going to start Monday the 2nd of August.
Which
now
is,
I knew about
Monday
this.
Coming.
I knew about it because I'd seen a notice on the lampposts in the Gilders or Garrison Lane, advance warning of roadworks commencing 2nd of August. And here we are, just 4 days away from when they're going to dig the road up, there'll be no buses, and we find out 4 days beforehand, 5 days beforehand perhaps, what they're going to do and how long it's going to take. 13 weeks, which is a few. No buses, very difficult for a lot of elderly people. This is a situation. How are elderly people going to go and do their shopping? is it a hospital? If they can't walk down to the Riderhead Road, they can't walk down to the Cup Rivers, what are they going to do?
So, to your mind, do you see that there's a basic responsibility from the council, perhaps in terms of notifying residents of not just necessarily the services that they provide, but also when disruptions are going to happen, etc., that isn't being basically fulfilled?
No, I don't think it is. No, I think 4 or 5 days' notice of something. I personally have known about the reconstruction. I suspect that many people do, but I didn't know the date when it was going to start. I was told early August. That's the usual sort of euphemism for, well, we've got a date, it can float 10 days one way or the other, and that's early August. So it's going to take a little bit. But they're not very good at communicating what they intend doing.
So it's partially lack of communication on part of the council, yeah, and partially a situation where perhaps you've got a lot of people that haven't been living here for very long, don't know very many other people, and don't want to engage with that.
Yes, too much. Yes. Right. They don't know how to engage. And maybe some of them don't want to.
Yeah. Okay. What first motivated you to become involved in the Residents Association? Which obviously, it's something you're clearly quite passionate about and something you believe strongly in. What was it that made you first? Was there a specific incident or?
It probably relates to housing more than anything else. The realisation that the housing stock needed a lot of work done to it, and this was 20 years ago, this. 15, 20 years ago. And seeing that the embarrassing line, there were some improvements carried out to three blocks of flats.
And this is council housing.
Council housing. They had door entry system put in, and entry phone system, nice security doors and blocks. But of course, it would have been nice to have them in York Way, but unfortunately, all those years ago, not enough people voted in favour of it. And this is another problem. Kingston Council has changed slightly. Back in those days, we had a vote on some improvement that was to be carried out to council housing. And we had to get a two-thirds majority. And the 18 flats in Garrison Lane were asked would they like security doors and door entry control system. And 12 of them said yes. So they got their two-thirds majority. And who decided the two-thirds majority? Nowadays, it's a 51% majority. And perhaps if we had that 51% majority back when the residents of York Way were asked, would they like security? They might well have got it. But unfortunately, the council decided to make the hurdles as high as possible, as they always do with housing. And we didn't get it. And that's what really motivated me to start getting involved in trying to make things better, specifically for the people who live in York.
Right.
Yeah.
So it really was, was there something that you were then involved in quickly off the back of that? Did you get involved in that particular issue?
No, I didn't get involved in that particular issue. I didn't know what the result of the consultation was. It was only when it became apparent that there was a good security door in the three blocks in Garrison Lane, and then make some inquiries to, well, are you going to do them in your way, to be told no, because not enough people voted in favour.
No.
So, yes, and there was a residents association at the time, but it didn't play any part in the business of the door entry plan. Security board, because the consultation was done before the present Residents Association was set up.
Right, but so it was.
I did get involved with them then, yes.
And you've already said it was about making things better. I guess that would be a summary of your.
Yeah.
Do you find? Would you say that your experience has met that expectation? I mean, is broadly looking back over the involvement that you've had, do you feel that you achieved that?
Well, with the security doors and the door entry control system. Three blocks of Garrison Lane got it, but the rest of York Way didn't because they didn't vote in favour. But of course, things have moved on since then. And back in 2000, was it 2000? Yes. We formed Chessington Hall Residents Association, presently petered out, with a very serious issue, not door entry fines, new windows or anything like that, but a serious problem of antisocial behaviour. Confronted with no legislation to cope with antisocial behaviour at the time, before Hasbro's scenes, the police very concerned about it, the local authority preferring to keep all its noise to itself, particularly housing, and having suffered since about 1995 onwards, considerable disruption, particularly at night time, the New York Way, and then subsequently discovering that it was indeed over many other parts of Chessington. So we set up the Residents Association, and the issue was antisocial behaviour, and well, it took over a year to sort it out, and indeed we did.
And what was your role in that association? I mean, were you like a founder member, I guess?
I was the chair of the Residents Association, and for me, the big issue was antisocial behaviour, and within we got about 2 weeks of forming the Residents Association. I was at home. My father was not well, still living here. I was looking after him. One morning at about 11 o'clock, there was a knock on the front door. And a local councillor was standing there with a resident from the building. He was in tears. They both came in, and I had some idea of the problems that were happening in that particular block regarding the antisocial behaviour problem. And the resident move, and I knew vaguely who the people were involved causing all the problems, so we organised a petition, and the petition walked round the following couple of days. I can't report on the signatures, we got quite a few. It was presented to council by Brian Bent, Councillor Brian Bent, and I think it was a Social Services meeting. I didn't go, but he presented it on our behalf. And at least it was the first nail in the coffin of the what we call New York Way Yobs. The local newspapers described them as that. And that was the first nail in the coffin of dealing with New York Way Yobs. And it had to be formal, a petition. But unfortunately, one, I don't think the petition is such. I doubt whether it's moved many minds in local towns to do anything about it. Housing preferred to keep it quiet. The police were struggling to cope with a dozen or so 14, 15, 16-year-olds who they couldn't arrest, they couldn't charge, because they were in this grey area. They weren't doing anything really serious, but it was antisocial behaviour, vandalising, graffiti, noise at night. And the police had their hands tied on the banks to try and deal with it. The local authority was largely not interested. No one had heard of antisocial behaviour orders at the time. Mr. Blanket, who invented them in 2000. So that's an issue that we really had to deal with. And unfortunately, it took a while, it took over a year, and we did deal with it.
But that particular incident that you just discussed with the petition, that happened very quickly.
Oh, it did. It happened within a couple of days.
How did you go about informing people of your intentions to set this up? How did you get people on board, as it were? And how did that resident that came to you within a couple of days of it kicking off know that you were involved and you were someone to speak to?
I think she probably, having said my earlier piece about many residents don't know who to contact when they've got a problem. Obviously she did, and she phoned a local councillor. And the local councillor must have told her, look, there's a residents association where you live in York Way. I'll come over and we'll go around to see the chairman.
Right.
And they're not doing anything there. And that's how that particular issue kicked off with a petition.
What about other members? How did you find other people to be? I guess the petition was just a case of visiting all the residents, yes. And they weren't necessarily active.
No, I don't think any of them were actually. I don't think any of them were. We just petitioned the people living immediately around the block. Yes. Just around the block. And we've got their signatures. I do have a copy of the petition. I can't get it to hand at the moment. And it was basically requesting that the local authority investigate the matter and take the necessary steps to prevent this from occurring again. And unfortunately, the resident of indeed she was. And of course, it's a classic, and I've seen it before, it's a classic case of the Royal Borough of Kingston Montem's Housing Department, particularly, preferring to sweep it all under the carpet. You move out the victim, and you leave the perpetrators in place. And then you put someone else in the weird way, who then becomes the next victim. And that's how the Royal Borough of Kingston Montem's Housing Department functions, and still does.
So that's something that you're clearly quite critical of.
I'm extremely angry, and curiously enough, literally within the last couple of days, I don't know all the facts and the details, but the residents have moved from Bransby Road. There is allegations that the girl who lived at Bransby Road, I'm not sure how old she is, 13, 14, 15, something like that, had some sort of sexual encounter with a resident who lives in York Way. And he's still living there in York Way, but family values are there. It's lost me too. So the problem is still there. Maybe the family in Bradley Road wanted to move. I don't know.
I guess
gone.
Without knowing the details of that particular case, it would be impossible to really comment. But your perception is that maybe it's the wrong people that are being moved on.
It always is.
Yeah.
It always is. And I have to say the problems of York Way were eventually solved. The resident beneath, who were the cause of much of the problem, were themselves already. And after that, York Way Yards, the drug dealing, all the antisocial behaviour, the vandalism, the graffiti, the noise and the nuisance.
Right. So, a minute ago you were saying, you know, how you kicked that whole thing off with the petition, but that it was actually quite a long process that took over a year. What was the next step? What else did you do? What else did the Residents Association put into practice to move that along?
What we did was find out council meetings that which we could go to and raise the matter. We met with local police. There was a police and community liaison group meeting every quarter. And we'd go along to that. And I remember the first one. And we described some of these individuals who were causing the problem. Subsequently became the York Way Yards. And I remember one particular officer, Tony Sage. Please consult Tony Sage, who, when I described these individuals, he said, "Oh God, yes, I know them. God, we've arrested that lot hundreds of times." The frustration that he had, and not being able to actually do anything about it, they'd arrest them, they'd be charged if they had committed some criminal offence, they'd slapped across the wrist in the Kingston Youth Court. There'd be no publicity because the Youth Court is done in camera. And no one would know. And they come out during their various activities, causing nuisance, vandalism, and everything else. And then the police would arrest them a few weeks later, and the whole process would be around.
So, what did you do to try and how did you get involved in stopping that cycle?
Basically, started making a nuisance of ourselves, going to council meetings. Questioning council officers, seriously questioning some local councillors who didn't want to talk about it because they probably knew what was going on. They didn't want to admit that they knew and certainly weren't prepared to share with us, the residents, all that they knew about what was going on and who was involved. So we did a lot of detective work on the names and in some cases the addresses of these individuals. With some success, I have to say, I think we had the names around 11 of them, They all lived in the immediate vicinity, three of them in York Way, one in Denison. And I can well recall a couple of meetings, one in particular, and standing up and reading the names and addresses out of these individuals. One particular councillor, he got really upset and irate that I was doing such a thing. And I told him in no uncertain terms, look, people need to know who these individuals are. You know who they are, probably. Housing, they know who they are, you know about it. So the rest of the people need to know. Because that way we can empower them to push, to campaign, to solve the problem.
You describe your role in it as being very active, and I can see that it was. How many other people were there in the association behind you, and what roles did they play?
I was very lucky that I was very lucky that I wasn't working at the time, so I had the time to devote to it. Several other committee members were involved as well. And we held a meeting and asked the local residents antisocial behaviour problem to meet with us, put out a newsletter and information about the residents' association and how we could help.
You publicised your contact details.
Yes, indeed we did. Oh, good Lord, yes, we had. We produced several newsletters, and they all featured, the problem of antisocial behaviour, and a series of phone numbers and names. Networking. Yes, networking. Well, before we didn't have the internet. That's what we did, and it seemed to work. Get the word out that there is a problem, and of course we discovered going to certain council meetings that were rather long titled, Chessington, Cook, Malden, Rushett, neighbourhood committee meetings, and we discovered that the problems that we were suffering in York Way, Dowson Hill, surprise, were having the same problem in Woodfield and in Malden Rushett. The same problems in Sanger, Woodgate Avenue, and Hook Parade, and Hook Parade, and Ace Parade, and half a dozen other places. And the individuals involved were the same individuals, were causing us a great deal of trouble.
Oh, right, so although there were problems in lots of other areas locally, it was the same
people? Yes, it was the same people. But again, if I hadn't gone to all these councils, I'm not so sure we would have found out that it wasn't just York Way, Dowson Lane that was suffering, but it was a serious problem right across many parts of Chesapeake.
And that obviously had an impact on the drive, I guess, motivation to...
It made it even more determined.
The more people you've got behind you, yeah.
It made it even more determined to push and get something done.
So were there any other issues that you were involved in as part of that residents association, or was that the main thing? Did you do anything else?
That was the main one. There were other issues of rubbish collection, there were issues of traffic calming. There was the inevitable issue that carried on for the mysterious carriage, which is the problem of the state of the council structures in there as well. But mainly it was the antisocial behaviour. There was an issue which affected everybody, whether they were council tenants, leaseholders, owner occupiers, it didn't matter. All people were suffering this problem of antisocial behaviour, and not just in York Way and Dowson Lane. So there was a desire to get this sorted above everything else, because it was in many respects the most important thing. I think it's fair to say also that I may not have said it, but I know somebody who did, in a particularly memorable, fractious meeting with local councillors saying, well, if you don't get something done about this, we're going to end up with a fatality. Or someone's going to get killed, or someone's going to get injured. And when it happens, they're going to come back to you, and they're going to say to you, well, we told you so.
So it was really getting that violent?
Well, of course it did. And in a lot of ways, it didn't do get violent. Early 2001, an assault outside Chesington South Station, a person who worked in the Indian Takeaway, struck over the head with a hammer. Unfortunately, not possible to see to know who did it. The CCTV images that were got from the station were clear enough to determine that. But three individuals were charged with a fray. These three individuals were well known as members of the Yorkway Yobs. They were found guilty and basically given sacrifice to this, and they continued. And then a few months later, the very same three individuals were involved in an incident outside. I saw it outside my block where I live. A resident was struck overhead by one individual, a piece of wood outside, like a baseball bat, and knocked to the ground. Phoned the police, gave a statement, appeared in the Kingston Youth Court in November 2001, and was convicted of a sentence. I think I did my duty. I had called back to the court shortly after the verdict, and the circuit judge, whose name escapes me now, said, he congratulated me, praised me for doing what I had done. He said that if more people were to do it, a lot of crime would not go unreported and unrecorded, and a proper outcome for the victims. But I thought that made me feel a lot better, yes.
Why do you think there's a lack of that?
I don't know. I wasn't the only person who saw that incident in Yorkway. Somebody else did. But were reluctant to appear and give some reluctant to give this statement, and reluctant to appear and give some new court for fear of reprisals from the individuals involved. And I think to some extent there is that element as well. And
was that person a part of the resident association as well?
She lived across the road. She wasn't a member of the committee, but she lived across the road. And she indeed would have seen what happened. She was even closer to it than I was. Wasn't prepared to appear in the youth court to give evidence.
Do you think perhaps the fact that you had a support network of people behind you in the Residents Association made you feel more confident about going out on a bit of a limb and possibly putting yourself in a vulnerable situation to give that evidence?
Yes, I do. And in the weeks after the cuts, threats were made against me. I couldn't take them very seriously. I don't think any of the individuals had the balls to do it, basically. On the basis that it was attacking me or whatever. I'm going to get out of my hospital bed and get out of the youth court. I happened to stand up and say, it was him. And they knew that, so I think a lot of people were very reluctant to tell the police what they saw or what they knew, for fear that somehow the Yorkway Yobs would find out the identity of the informants and carry out reprisals against them.
Right. on a bit of a tangent. Through your involvement in the association, did you ever make comment on or try to stop any planning applications?
I've just seen that. it tricks the memory into yes. There were several planning applications in the area. Two in particular, two very very prominent ones. A mobile phone mast at Chesington Golf Club, which was successfully defeated. And then another one was housing in its infinite wisdom, deciding that it wanted to put a children's play area and a bath space basketball pitch behind several of the blocks in Garrison Lane. He spent £40,000 or £50,000 doing it. Yes, he very successfully overturned both of them. The planning application for the phone master was refused. The playground, the kiddies play area, the planning application was withdrawn. When you walked around with a letter, all the residents had overlooked the proposed site of this play area and presented them with a letter, one saying in favour, and another letter saying, no, I don't want it. And let them choose which they want. And I think something like about 80-85% of the residents didn't want it. And when these documents were submitted to the planning department, the Royal Borough of St. Thames, a few weeks later, housing withdrew the planning application. So yes, we have.
Okay. So I mean, I realise we've been talking for over half an hour now, so I'll try and draw it to a bit of a close. But I guess what I'd really like to know is, thinking about your involvement in those things and thinking about how your actions have directly impacted upon both the physical area in terms of whether or not there's a phone loss, whether or not there's a playground, but also in terms of social issues and community structure. How do you feel your involvement in that has impacted upon the way you feel about living?
I must say the phone mast and the playground were some distance away from me, so I don't think I would have seen or heard either of them. But for the residents who live much nearer than I, neither happened, so I think in that sense that's a good thing. The antisocial behaviour problem, of course, was the major issue, and I think everybody benefited from that. We don't have all the problems that we did back in the mid-90s through to 2001. So I think we've improved the area. There have been minor problems of antisocial behaviour since by other individuals. But we now have, the police now have ASBOs, although this coalition government now seems to need to get rid of the social behaviour. It's not hardly surprising, you know, the party within the Commons, that the Home Secretary, Theresa May, she of the nasty party, as you call your Conservative colleagues, the nasty party, correct, did nothing about antisocial behaviour in Labour last year. And now I want to get rid of ASBOs. I don't know what they're going to replace them. So I think, yes, we've, broadly speaking, the Residents Association achieved something. We didn't achieve everything we wanted to do. We knocked on the head the antisocial behaviour problem, which is the biggest, a couple of planning applications. And I think, making a nuisance of ourselves in the council gets one's face known. Gets one's name known, and one feels that it's easier to confront councillors, council officers, and others with the problems around here that we used to have in the past. Feel that they would take notice, you know, without the Residents Association. I suspect they would probably have just dismissed the comments of individual people.
Right, so the power in numbers.
The power in numbers.
So also, aside from the obvious benefits of, yes, there is a reduced issue of antisocial behaviour, there's less graffiti, there's less noise, there's less threats of violence, etc. Aside from the obvious benefits of having, you know, addressed those issues, earlier on, when we first were talking, the issue, the word empowerment came up. Would you say that your involvement in these things, even including those that perhaps you haven't achieved the outcome you wanted, does that contribute to a sense of empowerment? Does that lead you to feel, I mean, from what you were saying then about getting your face known, that's kind of the impression I'm getting.
I think it does. The empowerment does help. I do feel that a lot of the residents, not the committee members, but the residents they probably didn't feel as empowered. And some of them probably did, but I suspect the majority didn't. Because again, they didn't understand what was happening and how to deal with it. And it was a struggle to get them involved in a meaningful way. They would sign a petition. It was difficult to get them involved more than just doing that. And I think it's a not just Chesapeake problem, I think it's a problem of residents' association, community groups all across the country. Motivating people to do something in the hope that it will improve the area where they live. Politics again, but Mr. Cameron's big society. I think people have been building big society long before David Cameron was ever born.
So, in terms of the difficulty of getting people involved, is it just the case that there's too many of us? Or?
I don't know. It's very difficult to convince people that doing something will make a difference. And unless you can actually show them that getting involved, going on a march, going on a demonstration, lobbying councillors, to achieve something, for a lot of people it's going to be very difficult. They won't believe that much will change because they don't have experience of it.
So, at the beginning of the interview, I stated that I was investigating the supposition that people who have an element of interaction or control with their areas feel generally more positive about living there. Generally, would you agree or disagree with that
statement? I'd absolutely agree with that. Yes. And I think those that don't feel somewhat left out.
And do you feel that your involvement in the associations would be an example to support that?
Yes, I do. I think it's a very good idea to get involved in one's local community as best one can. Some people will have difficulty doing it, work commitments, childcare commitments, and the family. All council meetings are held in the evening, for most of them. And it's difficult for families to work around somebody to look after the children, somebody to look after the dog, never mind the children, and things like that. And it's extremely difficult. Very often to go to these sorts of meetings. They're a bit awe-inspiring. Lots of people clam up and won't talk at a public meeting if it's in the council chamber. They're a bit overawed by the scale of the place. And it's very difficult to get them to come and make a contribution.
Can you think of any other examples outside of the Residents Association which might relate to that idea of sort of interaction and participation improving people's relationships with their area? Putting me a bit on the spot there.
I think there's one specific I tend to, not every day, more often than not, I tend to walk across it in the morning and come back in the morning and do a bit of shopping and clean clothes. And that's Churchill's Recreation Park. Somewhere on the Kingston website, I noticed a couple of days ago, they have had a Green Flag Award for that. And Canberra Gardens, no less, do you believe. And that makes me feel better about the area. What I would like is to council to shout and scream, look, we've got a Green Flag Award for Churchill Recreation Centre. It's safe, it's clean, it's tidy, it's well looked after. There are lots of facilities there that people can use. Children, great place to kick a football around, walk with a dog. Lots of people do, of course, but council needs to shout a bit louder. But this is what we've got, the Green Flag Award. Make use of Churchill Recreation Ground, and it's a positive thing. It's a nice place, I enjoy walking across it, and a long way to continue.
So, it's a positive thing to have that green space. You were talking about that before, having that space somewhere to walk, to spend time, leisure time, etc. But then also recognising achievements within the borough that have been recognised by external agencies.
Yep.
Don't you think maybe there needs to be a bit more of that, or a bit more publicity of that?
A bit more publicity, yes. If you visit on the website, but I'm not aware that if you don't look at the website, you wouldn't know that the Green Flag Award for Church Green Recreation and County Gardens as well.
So do you think, for example, if the council made a bit more effort to publicise that to local people, they might feel a bit better about living here as well?
I would hope so, yes. Yes, I would hope so indeed.
That's interesting.
That's not
something I thought of before, so thank you for that.
I think the slight downside is the disruption to the bus service that we're going to have for the next 3 months. And my comment that 5 days' notice there's going to be no buses as of 2nd of August is a bit tight. They haven't done very well with that one. They're not very good at public relations, not just housing, but most of the other departments too. They don't shout when they need to shout. No, they must be very good at public relations. Maybe they are pretty good. And their website is fantastic.
I should check out their website. Okay. Unless there's anything else that you think you need to comment on, then I think thank you.
Thank you.
I've heard all sorts of things as you went through it. That would be my interview, not yours.
Yes, it would.
Well, what I could do maybe is send you a copy of the questions and you could.
Yeah.
What do you think? I don't think the microphone will be able to pick up.
Oh no, I didn't want to. If you want it to, turn it around to me.
I think, to be honest, I've got 45 minutes here.
Yes, you have. Yes.
So I might say thank you very much. We'll leave it at that. Mm. Perhaps if I could give you some written things, and you could.
I'm sure there were other things as well.
Well, you can always phone me in. Thank you.
I'd forgotten all about the planning application. I'm glad you asked that. When I saw it come up, I thought, yes. There weren't many others, were there, planning application. I think it didn't do a bad job. Otherwise, it didn't last long enough.
Why do you think it didn't? Why did it dissolve?
We were too successful.
Yes. Yeah.
Too much people power. We took it away from the council.
The council didn't
like it. For example, when we went to talk to Hemelinson.
Myself,
some of the people from Northern Rockford. This is what I'm saying about networking. Got together and went to talk to Hemelinson up in London about Redwood. And before that, I had a similar meeting with one of these Garfield councillors who says, I can't do that, I'm never going to talk to him. The minute that we actually do so, they take over the meeting and it's all over the paper. Kingston Council have done this, Kingston Council have done that. They would even damn well there. They took all the kudos for what the people had done. Well,
what happened, of course, is we went to that meeting. We went in, I can't remember the name.
You weren't there.
Yes, I was.
Not the first one.
But when we saw Livingston in his office, not in his office, in a little conference room, and we went up by taxi, and then the fella from Northern Russia took us, and we walked into that room to discover Bamford and bloody Ian Reid sitting there.
Yes,
I think this might be getting a little bit beyond the realms of what I was specifically asking. So I'm going to say thank you. I'm going to stop the recording.
Right.
And if there's, if there's something else that you think would be useful, maybe to add on, then perhaps if we could do that in a written.
It was unfortunate that the council tried to take the kudos. Eh? Yes.
Anyway, thank you.